You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast. We're back. Brian Phillips, unfortunately, is not, but will be hopefully joining us again in a couple weeks. But in the meantime, you've got myself, Bart Logan, we've got Patrick Murphy back, Ori Benatar, Alex Stanek, and Andrew Atkins making a repeat, correct? This is your second?
Yeah, my second time.
Podcast? Excellent. So we got a full team here, and we got a lot to talk about, and I want to, guys, I'm sorry, but before you can have dessert, before we can talk about that glorious performance yesterday, we got to have our vegetables. And that starts with a trip to D.C., the Swamp, last Wednesday, and a not-so-great showing for Columbus against a team that we talked about on the podcast the week prior. You know, this could have the shapings of a trap game. It did, Patrick Murphy and Columbus crew, with Caleb not fielding his top lineup. It's still nonetheless a team that you think should probably be able to salvage at least a point on the road against a bad DC team, but not the case.
Yeah, that was a weird game for me. As you mentioned, you know, certainly not the top choice lineup for the crew at all. Some of the guys that you would consider didn't even travel. Obviously, Giassi wasn't back from that knee injury at that point. So you start Christian Nemeth, who, you know, just played his first game the match before in Houston. And the lineup was just a strange one. But Waylon Frances, who hadn't played in over a year, all of a sudden starts a game. Chris Cadden, who we hadn't seen in a while. Sebastian Berhalter hadn't been in, and I mentioned Namath. So, you know, a really kind of, you know, as much of a makeshift lineup as I think you'll see from, you know, the crew maybe ever, you know, and especially given the time between the two games, not a lot of time to practice with this group. So, you know, I wasn't exactly surprised that it was a rough game, especially visually. Crew had one shot on goal. Unfortunately, so did DC. They scored on that one shot. But, you know, I did think that it looked, you know, it. And Ori and I talked about this a little bit on our little halftime post-game Instagram live show that we do. Selfless plug there. But just they didn't look up for it as much as I thought. You know, those guys are getting, some of those guys I just mentioned are getting a chance for the first time in a while. You know, you think, okay, we're rotating in, we're getting to the playoffs, I may not have another shot to play as much this year. I thought maybe some of those backups would come in and, you know, at least show some life. Maybe you don't get quite the same performance tactically, it doesn't look as good, whatever the case may be, but I was just a little disappointed. They just seemed off to me in that game. And you know, as I mentioned, DC, one shot on goal, nine shots for the game. A goal that I think, you know, reminded me a lot of Toronto, where you just don't defend the top of the box. And, you know, it's Julian Gressel in this case pulls off the defense and has enough space. A bad deflection off of, I think it was Abubakar Keita, not his fault at all. You know, he's trying to block the shot and, you know, and unfortunate in that aspect, but certainly could have been defended better. And again, it's weird because of how good this team is defended at points this season to see these little mistakes that have started to creep up over these last several matches. And you know, that one, because they couldn't find the back of the net, cost them, you know, at least a point, if not three.
And that was, you know, you see so many guys you mentioned, you know, getting the appearance. And I think that's one of the one constant has been Jonathan Mensah. And we'll talk a little bit, you know, about his performance maybe in the upcoming game. But that was a crowded box there. You have Fatai Alashe, another player who's played a lot of MLS minutes, if not for Columbus. I thought that goal was a little bit troubling, Andrew. And you've said, you know, in the past that you've been seeing some, you know, concerning trends about this team defensively. And it looked like, again, they started manifesting in D.C. Wednesday.
Yeah, it seems like the major crux is we like to play out of the back. We like to pass out of the back, and that's something where we've been seeing a lot of bad mistakes with that play style. jumping ahead a little bit to the game against Philadelphia, we saw a really bad one from Mensah that almost cost us. And that's one of the big things that's been hurting us defensively, as well as set pieces and just a alarming lack of ability to defend set pieces this season. We've had a lot of costly penalty kicks that we've given up, whether it's a call that's questionable or a call like we saw against Philadelphia that you can't really argue. So we had just a really stellar defense for a while there. And then I think more so recently, it's hard to call our defense stellar. It's more so, I think, a league average defense at this point, which I'm not saying our defense is bad, but I'm definitely not saying that that historic run we had through the first half of the season, I don't think we see that same defense anymore.
What about on the other side? We finally get we saw a little bit of Christian Namath in the game prior, but this is his first start. And I thought, you know, even for a team that didn't, you know, wasn't managing shots on net, I don't know, I just thought I saw a lot more from him, just the movement, the energy that he has, just maybe the little bit of spike. He seems a little bit ornery out there. But I was somewhat impressed with the performance that you got from Christian Namath. I thought he gave you a lot more than I'd seen from Fernando Adi in his few spot starts. Alex and Ori, what do you think about Namath and just the attack in general? That, you know, we saw a little bit of, you know, some glimpses, and then you later see guys like Zellerayan and Nagby plugged in that second half, but just weren't able to really ever click.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Namath played well. I agree that he's showing a lot better than Adi ever did, although I got to the point where Adi, where I was tweeting that I would rather start a cardboard cutout of Jairo Arrieta over Fernando Adi, so it's not a high bar to clear. But in general,
imagine how many times that would be offside.
That's right, you know. But at least, you know, he's not giving you the illusion. The cardboard cutout is not giving you the illusion of playing with 11 men. So I would be totally cool if they just cut Adi at this point. But Namath is a very, you know, suitable backup striker. I actually think he's one of the better backup strikers that the Crew have had in quite some time. I saw a lot of energy from him. I thought he put himself in good places. It was not clicking for that team. And, you know, as soon as you saw that lineup, you know, for me at least, I started going, oh no, this is going from something that should be a winnable game to one of these games where you could really see it flipping for the Crew. And unfortunately, that's what happened. You know, we were outmatched by a very, very poor DC team and, you know, got the result that we deserved at the end of the day. So,
yeah, and as poor as that DC team has been all season long since they fired Ben Olsen, they've been able to have a good stretch of games. They went on a 4-match unbeaten run, just coming off of an exciting 4-3 loss to New England. But DC has put themselves into playoff position since Ben Olsen has been fired. They're not in the top 10 right now, but they're within striking distance to get to that top 10. But to add on to Christian Namath, I think the big word for him as a striker is instinct. He is a striker that plays off of instinct, and you saw that in the Philly game especially. When you come off of the bench as a striker, all you got to do is just run to where you think the ball's going to go. And that's what you want to see out of your striker. You don't necessarily always want to see, you know, just hold up play or somebody that just wants to keep shooting and shooting. You need to have a little bit of a variety as a striker in regards to anticipating runs, moving off the ball, being good at hold up play, having a decent amount of dribbling, and then just having clinical finishing. And, you know, Christian Namath has been able to show in the few appearances that he's had for the Crew since he's joined the club that he has the instinct as a striker to be in the right place at the right time. He had a couple of chances there against DC, especially as the ball kept coming in from outside the box in those crosses, because Columbus had a lot of chances from crosses in that DC game. And I think one of them, he had a header that just went over the bar, because he knows where to make those runs, similar to Jossie Zardes. Zardes is also very good at making those anticipating runs, finding the open space, and just tapping the ball in sometimes to score. You don't always have to shoot from 18 yards out, score a nice finesse, or just rocket one into the upper 90. just tapping it in is enough too. And that's what you want out of, especially a backup striker too. So I think Namath in the short showing has helped, and he can be a very important player come playoff time. If Columbus gets into potentially some extra time games where you might need that silver goal to avoid penalties.
Does anybody think that with the lineup that Caleb Porter fielded, he expected a point or points, let's say points, out of this game? Or do you think he was just saying, I want to have as many guys as I have healthy for the big home game against Philadelphia? Because right now, you know, for a guy who said he wanted trophies, expected to bring trophies for this team, I think you do have to, I don't know, how do you thread that needle? How do you do that balancing act? And what do you guys think about Caleb Porter's balancing act that he's putting forward when it comes to this rotation and fielding lineups in this truncated schedule and so many injuries?
I think Caleb was pretty clear after that game about what they thought. And without saying they were willing to sacrifice the DC game and just try and get what they could get out of it, you know, he did admit that, you know, they knew they had to rotate in this game. And that may have been different had they not had to reschedule the Orlando game. They would have had a week off then, mm-hmm. after Sunday. But he did say, you know, we knew we were going to have to rotate in this one, and now we'll be able to field a strong 11 for the final three games of the season. So, you know, I think you can pretty easily read into that, hey, we're going to try and get what we can out of this game, but, you know, we want to have our best possible lineup for these final three games, try and get 9 points out of that. To your second part of the question, I think that it would have been a little different if there hadn't been that slump in, you know, a few games ago where you kind of lose grip on the supporter shield race, right? So, you know, you're, what, 6 points back or something like that, still there, but, you know, it's looking unlikely. So I think in his mind, you know, MLS Cup was always number one, and the supporter shield would have been, you know, a great secondary trophy to take home. And obviously everything that comes with it, the Champions League spot, the home playoff games, all that. But now that seems like it's a bit distant, a bit unlikely, okay, let's get as healthy as we can and get our form back once we're healthy, so we can, you know, make a run. And I think that was the approach, you know, like it or not, agree with it or not. You know, I think you can argue it to some degree. And I think the best way to know if it works or not is how they finish the season. You know, if they end 3-0 here against, got the game against Philly, if you can beat Orlando and Atlanta next weekend, you know, I think you're feeling pretty good about, you know, that decision. But as Ori said, this DC team has been better. It was still a bad loss. I think even with that lineup, they probably should have gotten a point out of it.
Alex. I just want to say something really quick. The loss definitely stung less since they traded Federico Higuain. If we would have lost to DC with our B team and Pepe was on the squad, I would have started drinking. And I did not touch alcohol that evening, so that was good.
That was definitely a plus, and I do like people. I like that at least Dos Higuain's happened. I would have liked it more to happen in Columbus, but I'm glad that it has happened in MLS, and not for a team that I just outright hate. At least,
I just don't know how I'm going to cope with like having to play them in a competitive match. Like that's going to be brutal.
That will come in 2021. It was supposed to happen this year, but this year then happened.
And I don't know. And I don't know that you're going to maybe you will play them both. I don't know if Federico's, has he said anything about, you know, committing to playing again next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard anything, but I mean, his minutes have significantly dropped off. I think he's played 3 times for Miami, but I think it's for like a total of 16 minutes. So, yeah. You know, obviously at DC, he was the player coach. So there's clearly an eye on what's next there. So that'll be interesting, you know, and that's obviously a conversation we can have down the road. But yeah, I don't know if he'll go again another year.
Well, Well, we will get back. We'll see with that. But we've still got some big games ahead of us, including a big matchup, Columbus Crew against Philadelphia this past Sunday, just yesterday. We're recording on Monday, and this was the game again. Obviously, you alluded to it, Patrick, when you gave us the comments from Caleb post game Wednesday. He wanted to make sure he had the big guns ready, and this was probably the first time. With the exception of maybe being a little bit hamstrung because you don't have the option of choosing Josh Williams over Kata. It remains to be seen whether Caleb would have just picked Kata, straightforward just out of the form. But otherwise, all of his weapons at his disposal. We see Derek Etienne get the start opposite of Pedro Santos on the wings. Everywhere else, exactly whom you'd expect. And this team, in the first half, I think it was really, they had some great opportunities to go in front even early. Jossie Zardes has a big header that he just misses, but they get a lead. And we haven't seen this team, I feel like, playing with a lead for such a long time, with the exception of that NYCFC game, which seems like such a just blip in this radar these last 2 months, otherwise being pretty miserable soccer to watch. Was it it's home? It seems like this team, whether it's home or away, they seem to play to the level of their opponent. And against Philadelphia, against the Supporters Cup favorites, they played some of their best soccer, Andrew.
Yeah, they did. And the thing about this match against Philadelphia is, like you said, we're coming off of a really rough tear for about a month and a half of just tough matches to watch. And you're also coming off of since the last Philadelphia match that we had a fully healthy roster. So we had excuses throughout the past month and a half as to why we're performing poorly. I don't think you can ever excuse losing to Cincinnati, but you had your reasonings, whether it be bad calls or whether it be not having Nagby, not having Zellerion, playing on the road being tough this year. Going into Philadelphia, I felt like this was probably the most important match of the season to date, because this was the match where you had no more excuses. You were at home, you had your full roster, and I think that the win against Philadelphia speaks louder and means more than the last month of soccer that we've seen, because this was the game that you had no more excuses. You had to win this match to prove that you belong at the top of the table and in the conversation for best team in the league. And I think that the Crew did exactly what they needed to do with very few shots on goal, but we converted the shots that we had. We converted the opportunities we had. And I felt so good coming out of the Philadelphia game. It was just a really good reminder of what this team's capable of when we have the full arsenal.
Look, I think you're getting to the point in the season when all that matters is wins. In three games, that's all that matters, right? You're in the playoffs. They're one game. There's no back and forth with the legs or anything like that. So to me, that's what that game was reflective of. Was it the best Crew performance we'd seen all season? No. I mean, Philadelphia probably, in terms of just pretty looking soccer, outplayed them. Clearly had more chances. The shots were... what is it? I had it up here. These shots 22 were
7, including a 9-3 on target advantage.
Yeah. So, Philadelphia had more of the chances and whatnot, hit the crossbar, hit the post. Aloy Room had to make 8 saves, but sort of to what Andrew's saying, you needed this win if you're the Crew, and 3 points was the absolute minimum you needed from that game. You're getting your guys back. It's the first time they'd played together since the last time you played Philly 12 games ago, which is crazy to think about because it feels like that was like a month ago. In fact, it probably was.
It was in September. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. It's just, to me, this was just get out there, get those guys back in there, get a win. I think in Orlando, you'd like to see a better, performance in terms of the way they play. Against a team that you're right neck and neck with here for this final, your final playoff position. But, again, anything that matters now is just winning games. And, I think you take what you can get in this one, because it's the best team in the league, you know, at least coming into the game. You are coming off of some disappointing form, getting guys back, all that stuff. And I think everything that goes into it to come out with 3 points, even if the other team, you know, outplayed you a little bit, I think is a plus.
The form to me still seemed like it was poor. I think that was the thing that was concerning about that game. I think that the difference in that game was Eloy Room was incredible. Yeah. He stood on his head, and Joe Bendik still sucks. I mean, to me, like, you can sum up the game in the fact it's a bad man bun.
Oh my god.
The man
bun. That's such a I just got fired look, and just like, I'm actually doing really well right now. I decided to grow a man bun, you know. It's going great. It's going great.
Yeah. The year of COVID has not been kind to Joe Bendik. He's made some really poor life decisions. And you know, he was not great against the Crew. And you know, if we had Tarbell in net, or if we had Bendik in net, I mean, that game would have been ugly. I mean, we're talking, they would have put 4 or 5 or 6 up on the Crew. And so as much as I want to be optimistic coming out of that game, I get that it's against Philly and they're a very, very good team. You know, on a different day, is that a win? You know, I don't think so. I think it's a loss. So, it's definitely an improvement over what we've been seeing, but I think it's almost only an improvement in the goalkeeping category. I think we still have some work to do in the rest, and hopefully as those guys get minutes together, the form will improve, but I think we got really lucky against Philly.
Well, and it's worth pointing out, and I know Ori has something, but Joe Bendik may be the Union's keeper through the playoffs. So, you know, Andre Blake hurt his hand, I think it was.
Yeah, and his right hand is fractured.
Yeah, so broken. You know, I'm not sure you see Andre Blake in the playoffs, which, you know, your point is valid, Alex, certainly. But if Andre Blake is what the Union is rolling with into the postseason, they may not be a team that, regardless of whether they win the Supporters Shield or not, may not be a team that sticks around very long, because he was not good. not good at all.
I mean, especially in that second goal where basically, as a goalkeeper, when you're coming off your line, you have to be confident that if I'm coming off my line, especially on a far post cross like that, with only basically a defender and a striker neck and neck with each other, and the defender was like practically standing goal side of Namath, if you're coming off your line, you have to get the ball, or at least touch the ball. And he flailed at it and allowed Namath to tap it in at the back post. But I think the optimistic side of this game for Columbus, while it wasn't the best performance, you did see some good individual performances, obviously, from Ayla Room. I thought Buba Keita was fantastic in that game. He was in the right place at the right time in a lot of instances where Philly was near the box, getting ready for a shot, had good interceptions and good blocks. His passing, I think, still needs to improve. But I think the optimistic part is that we're towards the part of the season where, you know, you're not looking for pretty wins. You're looking for just winning a game. It was a FIFA result. You get 22 shots in FIFA, but your opponent gets 2, and they still win the game because your goalkeeper's not playing well, but the other one is playing out of his skin. So the optimistic side of it is that the fact that Columbus can be at home in the midst of cold and flurries and playoff-like conditions in the beginning of November, pull out a victory against the best team in MLS throughout the home market stretch of this MLS regular season, still made the semifinals of MLS's back as well. The Union have had a great season thus far. That shows that this team, with their strongest lineup, has the grit and the grind to pull out those victories. And when you get to the MLS Cup playoffs, looking at a win like that, other teams might see that and be like, you know what? Even if we outshoot these guys, they have a keeper that can stand on their head. They have defenders that can block shots, and they have attackers that can just pop up and just put the ball in the net instantly, and midfielders that can control possession. Nagby once again played very well. Artur scoring again at home. He did something very smart, shooting on the floor, which you want to do in those kind of conditions. 30-mile-an-hour winds, I don't want no shots in the air, especially from outside the box. So you got to show that you can just win games no matter what the circumstances are, and that's what you need in November, December soccer in MLS.
So there's, I think if Eli Room was obviously a really high point in performances for Columbus, a low point would probably be Jonathan Mensah, who of course gave up the penalty that Philadelphia scored their lone goal on and put in probably his worst performance of the season, or certainly least memorable one he will want to forget. What my only concern and why I bring this up is because the fact that he has played, I think, every minute, maybe not every minute for this team, but virtually every minute, and I guess it's, you know, should there be concern? I believe that Jonathan Mensah can put a performance like that behind him without any problem. My concern is just the level of fitness for, and not that he is an incredibly fit athlete, but this isn't playing every minute of the season. This is playing every minute of a truncated season where you've got 3 games on 8 days regularly. Are there any concerns for any of you guys from that performance, or, you know, moving forward, does Caleb Porter need to, you know, find an opportunity to maybe give Jonathan Mensah a bit of rest over these final 2 games?
I think that would be ideal. I think given the situation, there's not room for that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I do think Jonathan's a guy who can handle it. I think yesterday was, you know, as bad as we've seen him play in some time. You know, it was almost like Jonathan Mensah that first year when he just was mistake prone. The ball where Andrew alluded to this earlier, the ball where he tried to cleared it right off a Union defender and or attacker, and Eli Room had to make the save. A couple other giveaways, obviously the penalty kick got caught flat footed and then couldn't beat Santos in a foot race, and takes him down in the box. So, you know, not his best. I do think, like you said, Bart, I think he can put this behind him. If you had Josh Williams available, maybe you would have been able to sit him for a little bit, but I also think Jonathan's a guy who wants to play and wants to play as many minutes as possible. You know, I don't think he's worried about his fitness or anything like that. I think that's part of the reason he was given the armband was he's a guy that they expect to be out there pretty much all the time. And this season's certainly been tough on everybody, but he's motored through it. He's been arguably the best defender in the league this year, probably the Crew's best player. Given Nagby and Zellerayan missed as much time as they did. And I think you just roll with him. The good news is once you get to the playoffs, you'll have, you know, roughly a more normal schedule. You won't be playing as many midweek games, more time off. So I think that will help him as well. But yeah, I think, you know, and I'm not sure you're ready to throw Grant Lillard out there, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think Jonathan's gonna play these last 2 games, and, you know, maybe if you get up big, I don't see them getting up big against Orlando, but, you know, Atlanta's been bad. If you can get up 2 or 3, maybe you can pull him out for the last 15, 20 minutes just to get him a little rest. But like I said, that's a guy who wants to be out there, wants to play for his team. And I'm sure he's going to want to get out there in Orlando and put this game behind him.
So I think one of the really promising signs, I think, from Columbus, from that Philadelphia game was getting some spark off of the bench. And it wasn't just Christian Namath, but also Lucho Diaz. Finally, I mean, obviously Bendick did not play that as well as he could have, but that doesn't take away from what an exquisite ball that was. And to see that, that's the sort of appearance, you know, sub appearance that I feel like we've been looking for from this team, because we've talked about the depth, but you haven't seen too many times where you've had those impact subs. Those were a pair of impact subs Sunday.
But that's not the first time we've seen Luis Diaz do that. I think the past couple of times Luis Diaz has come off the bench, he's made an impact. This game against Philly, puts in a phenomenal ball, uses his pace. And also you saw him get aggressive there at the end of the game. One of the Philly defenders just pushed him down in stoppage time. And one thing Diaz has done all season long when he's played is sprint back to defend. And that's good of a winger to do, especially when he has energy. But he's had a couple of impact substitution performances. The most other recent one that comes to mind is against Houston, where his cross created the own goal. So he's another player that's going to be really key come playoff time, especially when you're going to start seeing, a three attacking midfield set where you'll have Pedro, Lucas, and probably Mukhtar starting there, you know, intertwined between Mukhtar, Diaz, and Etienne. But I would suspect when you get to the playoffs, you would probably have Pedro, Lucas, and Mukhtar as the starting three behind Zardes in front of Artur and Nagby, and Diaz and Etienne and Boateng being those guys that come off the bench there. But I think Diaz has put in together some, you know, a handful of good substitute appearances, being effective off the bench to, you know, salvage some points. His substitution appearance helped the Crew get their win against Philly and helped them get a pretty important point against Houston in another very bad away performance.
You know, it's actually with Diaz, you hear about people playing themselves into a starting position. I think Diaz has played himself into a substitute position because he has proven so valuable in a late match when legs are tired to bring on that speed. And he's become a super sub for Crew, where when I see him come on the pitch, I know immediately balls are going to start getting whipped into that box. He's going to start smoking defenders. And I think Diaz has found this niche on this team where he's going to be guaranteed minutes every match towards the end of the game to just come in and add a spark to that attack. In terms of whether it's Mukhtar, Etienne, or even Boateng, I don't know. There's no clear starter in my mind on the right side of the pitch there, but I think Diaz is solidified himself, and it could be seen as a negative to be, you know, the backup, but I think he's just solidified himself as perfect for that role, perfect for coming in a late match and just grinding on a weakened defense.
I also don't want to overlook the performance from Artur. You talked a little bit about the goal earlier, Ori, but just another all-around great game from him. And to start seeing this goal scoring and just the threat, I think, that you have, him presenting at least a viable threat at the edge of the box to take a shot, I think is a huge boost. This is also a guy who completed 98% of his passes last game. And, I mean, you know, we're not going to – I think Jonathan Mensah, I agree with you, Pat, is the Crew's MVP for the season. And you probably go Giassi, Zardes number two when you look at the goals. But I think slotted in their third, underrated, has been Artur, who has been – pretty darn solid for Columbus and seen almost as many minutes as Jonathan Mensah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a guy who came to the Crew, had that first really good season under Greg Berhalter, young player. I remember us talking on the podcast about, you know, how long is he even going to be in Columbus? Similarly with like Milton Valenzuela when he got here, a young player who had that breakout year, really cemented himself. And you know, while he hasn't played up to that level the last couple of years, he hasn't left, you know, being the Crew's central midfielder, really. There was that brief period last year that we don't need to talk about where Caleb Porter put his old buddy in there for a while. But, you know, Artur's been the guy. And I think this year he's really found that form again. And, you know, if he can start adding goals, and, you know, I think Ori makes the point about, hey, when you shoot in conditions like that, keep it low and good things happen. You saw the first goal in the last home game against New York City, just being in the right place at the right time, making a run into the box off of, I think it was a throw-in or a corner or something. You know, if he can start finishing, you get, you know, maybe next year you get 5-6-ish goals from him. I think that's when he starts evolving his game to that next level. He's become that classic central midfielder, break things up, you know, pass the ball well, those type of things, especially playing alongside Nagby. If you can get goals from that position, now you're starting to, you know, really have something there. So a very good performance from him. Good to see. I also think he's just very comfortable playing next to Nagby. You know, I think he knows Nagby's going to win tackles. He knows he's going to win or play the ball to the right person. So, you know, it gives him a little bit more freedom to do whatever they need him to do, which I think helps. You know, that's an interesting midfield duo. And then obviously you have the depth behind them with the young kids and Fatai Alashe going forward. So, you know, I think Crew fans should be excited about what this midfield is going to have, not only the rest of this year, but going to next year as well.
I also just have to say, not only did offensively was he getting it done, led the team with 5 tackles and 4 interceptions. To your point there, he's become very, very successful in that number 6 role. So Columbus getting the win against Philadelphia, they've got to wait at least one more game before they can be crowned supporters, Shield champions. And, you know, Columbus not mathematically out of it. One team that is, well, we'll talk about them a little bit later. But before that, Ori, can you run us through the playoff scenarios? What did Columbus's win here change for their outlook?
So all it doesn't really change much. The biggest thing it affects is they are still alive for the supporter shield. And yes, there will be an article coming out on election day with all the scenarios and whatnot. And I'm showing the guys right now everything I'm writing down because I'm working hard on this stuff. But essentially, what going into the Orlando game, if Columbus beats Orlando, they secure a top 3 seed. But a 3 seed and a 4 seed virtually are almost the same, just in the sense of most likely the top 4 teams in the Eastern Conference will finish with more points than the top team in the West, which right now is Portland, who are the only team in the West alive for the supporter shield, which is at 44 points for them. That's Portland's maximum. That's Columbus's maximum. And essentially, I think what could happen for this week in these last 2 games, I think Caleb will start a strong lineup against Orlando, because I think they've probably been told that, look, you got to beat Orlando to clinch a top 3 seed. That keeps us alive as well for a bye. But interestingly enough, breaking down the scenarios, Columbus can't get the 2 seed, from my understanding, because Columbus doesn't have the tiebreakers in order to be ahead of maybe Toronto or Philly if Toronto or Philly lose their decision day game. Philly's playing New England. Toronto's playing the Red Bulls. Both those teams have made the playoffs but are playing for seeding. So they're going to field strong lineups. Philly and Toronto, both the most likely teams that can win the supporter shield, because – Columbus can mathematically still win the supporter shield and come in first place. They need to win out. They would need Philly and Toronto to both lose on decision day, but they also need tiebreakers. More likely they can get the tiebreaker to get first place in the East, because they will have the goal difference advantage. Columbus has still conceded the least amount of goals in MLS this season, and all the teams would be tied on the first tiebreaker, which is wins on 13, but Columbus would probably have potentially the goal difference edge if they have a good performance.
I'm seeing Philadelphia still at 22.
So Columbus would basically need to outright destroy Orlando, and maybe Atlanta would need Philly to get destroyed by New England. So number 1 seed looking tough, considering they'll be tied on wins and then goal difference. And here's the thing, actually, now that I just remembered, there's so many thoughts going through my head, I have to clear them out. It's not goal difference. It's goal difference per match. So you have to take GD divided by matches played. So Philly's GD per match is 1.
That's so 2020.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. So
goal difference per MLS.
Yeah. So that even too. Though the points per match law for the standings was essentially implemented to give Colorado a fighting chance to make the playoffs, which right now Colorado's in a playoff position. You know, you've got that affecting the East as well. So it's pretty interesting stuff, but, you've got a lot of stuff going on, but, I know Andrew's got to go pretty soon. I want Andrew to drop some score predictions for Orlando and Atlanta. What you got, buddy?
Well, I don't like it, but I don't see us getting a win in Orlando. Not with the way the, travel schedule is this season, and not with the way the Crews played on the road this season. So I gave Orlando the 2-0 over the Crew. Not happy about it, but that's just how I feel it's going to go down. I'm going to flip that around for Atlanta. I think we're taking a 2-0 victory in decision day over Atlanta.
Okay. Nice to see. Well,
thank you guys for having me, and I'm sorry I have to drop out a little early.
No problem, man. I've got those down, though, and we're not happy. We're going to have to reenact them later in the podcast.
All right. I'll see you guys later.
See you, Andrew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just continuing looking at those scenarios as well. So the likeliest thing for Columbus would be to get between the 3 and the 4 seed. They can't drop below the 5th seed. So Columbus is not going to be playing in any of those play-in games that the 7 and the 10 seeds are going to be playing in before the actual playoff bracket gets started. The only way Columbus drops to the 5 seed is if they lose both these games. They would need Orlando to win their decision day match against Nashville, and New York City would be the team to hop above them. They would have to beat Chicago on Sunday. So Columbus can only finish in 1st, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Likely, if they beat Orlando, they will come in 3rd. And if they lose to Orlando, most likely they would come in 4th, unless they just don't have a good performance against Atlanta. And then all the other ifs, ands, or buts that are against them happen on Sunday. So I would suspect Columbus will get the opportunity to host a playoff game. All they got to do is win one of these two games. Even if they draw one of these two games, they'll have that tiebreaker over New York City, because New York City's max is 39. If Columbus just ties one of these two games, they'll be on 39 points. They'll be ahead of New York City regardless. Orlando would take that 3rd-place spot. So more likely than not, Columbus will host a playoff game unless something catastrophic happens in these last two games. And between the 3 and the 4 seed, if you make MLS Cup, you still have a good opportunity to host MLS Cup, no matter between 1 and 4 in the East, because the Eastern teams have just been significantly better than the Western Conference this season. So Supporters Shield is still alive, but mathematically it's very, very challenging. So, but that's why Wednesday's game is incredibly crucial. You got to beat Orlando on Wednesday to get a top 3 seed secured. So, you know, going into the game on Sunday, like, all right, we know we're hosting a playoff game. We can maybe rest some guys up a little bit against Atlanta, you know, fight potentially to get goal difference and whatnot going into, you know, decision day. So Wednesday's game is the game. That's what's going to count.
And we know that for this Columbus team, home is going to be really important, getting those home games. I'm now looking at the standings, and they've updated them since our last podcast, and they now don't even count the win down in Orlando that was technically an away game as an away win. So Columbus 0-4-5 on the road. I think, you know, you've got Chicago Fire winless on the road, and that is the only other team in MLS that is yet to come away with 3 points.
I believe this will be the first time, assuming the Crew don't win on the road in Orlando. I'm not sure what Chicago's last game is. I think it's the first time. I think every year the playoff team has at least won at least one road game. So you could have two teams do that this year, and I believe that's the first time ever.
And Chicago will be on the road against Minnesota on Wednesday, so
but that may not get played because of COVID stuff.
Oh, okay.
Minnesota is dealing with.
So then, points per game then really will come into factoring in potentially for those 7, 8, 9, and 10 spots. So yeah, things could get messy if that Chicago Minnesota game doesn't get played for the East.
All I can say is I'm really happy that at least they're going with points per game and goal differential per game instead of doing what Major League Soccer uses to decide these things a lot of the time, which is how many times various fan groups retweet certain hashtags. So steps in the right direction from the way that they are deciding goalkeeper of the week and stuff like that. Hey, Ori, real quick, a mathematic question for you here. From your math, what are the odds of the Crew competing for the wooden spoon? Do you have any rough odds on that one for us there? I know there are a couple teams competing for this. At least there were a couple weeks ago. Has there been any changes there?
So with my vast mathematical knowledge and my broadcast journalism degree, having taken 2 math classes in college, I can safely say there is a 100% chance that the Crew will not come in last place in the East or in MLS, because the only standing in all of Major League Soccer that is set in stone before decision day is that FC Cincinnati will finish in last place in the league. They're on 16 points. The maximum they can finish with is 19, and that's still 2 points behind the minimum of DC and Miami. So Cincinnati officially will finish in last place in the Eastern Conference.
My God, you hate to see it. You just really hate to see it.
Love to see them, you know, bringing home the woodwork. That's
right. Two trophies in 2 years for them. Unbelievable. And it's a trophy that the Crew have never won. It's really just unbelievable. Unbelievable start from FC Cincinnati. And they owe it all to their great fans who never leave early. So unbelievable.
It's just so sorry. Such a well-deserving fan base that just always turns out for their team, doesn't turn on them at the least, you know, first sign of any sort of, you know, rough stuff. Nope, they're Cincinnati till they die, or, you know, they're gone now. We'll see if they even show up when they're allowed to have fans back in there. I want to quick, Ori, if you can quick run through, because we're talking about, again, the importance of that home, getting those home games for Columbus. How have the playoff standings changed this year? You see a lot more teams in there. I know that the two games aren't, you don't have the home and home anymore. Now it's just heads up one game. And so I think home performances and capturing at least a couple home games are going to be vital for Columbus if they want to make any noise.
Yeah, absolutely. Home advantage in single legged affairs is incredibly crucial, because we saw, and a perfect example of showing why home can matter in a one legged affair is you saw what happened in the Champions League this summer. They played in a neutral venue, which allowed these teams like Atalanta and Lyon to come up with some big results and advance into the semi, you know, advance to further stages of the Champions League before, you know, knocking teams out like Manchester City, you know, Bayern Munich beating Barcelona 8-2 in Lisbon. If they're playing at Camp Nou, that's probably not the scoreline, despite the fact Barcelona being terrible. So if MLS was in a neutral venue like at MLS's back, that opens the door for potentially more upsets. Maybe you see the likes of Montreal or Nashville come up with big victories. But MLS this season, with the way you have to travel, with traveling day of the game, you're not seeing great road records from a lot of teams. And Columbus, who is almost perfect at home, you know, only one loss in their 9 home matches. They haven't even drawn at home. They've won all their games at home except for that one against Montreal. If you can play one or two games at home, that's going to be incredibly crucial. You know, if Columbus gets that 3 seed, assuming they win that knockout game in like the quarterfinal stage, and assuming all the high seeds continue to win, you're looking at probably playing Toronto or Philly in that semifinal match, and then potentially going to Philly or Toronto, depending on who gets 1 or 2. Let's assume Philly gets number 1, Toronto gets 2. Columbus goes ahead, wins their 3-6 quarterfinal, probably go and play Toronto in Connecticut, which isn't even really a road game or a home game for Toronto. It's a road game for Columbus, but it's not a home game for Toronto. And then maybe they beat Toronto, get revenge on them after their loss all the way back in September. And then you go and play at Philly, which you haven't played at Philly all season long. So because of the fact that the number 1 seed is mathematically so hard for them to get, you know, Columbus is going to have to figure out how to win a game on the road, and they're going to have to figure it out fast if they want a chance to win MLS Cup, because all you got to do maybe is win 1 or 2 games on the road. It's a tough task, especially against maybe the likes of Toronto or Philly. Maybe you hope an upset happens now that Philly might not have Andre Blake for the rest of the season because he broke his hand, and now Bednick's in goal, and we saw that he is not the worthwhile replacement, to say the least. But you maybe hope for an upset. You got to win a game or two on the road, at least one game on the road if you want to get to MLS Cup. And again, I think there is a very good chance that if Columbus makes MLS Cup, they'll get the chance to host it, because the Western Conference this year has been nothing short of surprisingly not great. There's no teams in there that scream out, you know, MLS Cup favorite, other than Portland, Kansas City, and Seattle. I think those are the only three. But even then, I would say Philly, Toronto, Columbus, Orlando, even New York City now are all better squads. I wouldn't consider Los Angeles FC, because they might score the most goals in the league, but they've conceded 35 this season. Defensively, they're just shocking.
Well, I don't want us to get too far ahead of us ourselves, because Columbus still have 2 games to go, including Wednesday against Orlando. Down in Orlando would be a great time for this team to pick up its first road win of the campaign. But this is an Orlando team. We mentioned it ad nauseum. They're right there with Columbus in the standings. And this is a team that's coming off a 1-0 victory, but also a 4-1 victory earlier in the week against Atlanta. They're playing well. Nanny has been, having a renaissance season for them. What should you expect, and what should Crew fans be looking for against Orlando Wednesday night, Pat?
Yeah, this is, you know, we talked about it before the last game, you know, that obviously got rescheduled to Wednesday, but this is an Orlando team that certainly had a resurgence this year. They've made the playoffs for the first time in the team's history, and it's been a much better group under Oscar Pareja, a guy who, as I talked about the last time, you know, an MLS veteran himself, played in the league for a long time, coached in the league for a long time, so he understands how to negotiate and navigate this league. And, you know, I think that's benefited Orlando. You know, you mentioned Nani, but they've gotten a few players that have, you know, kind of emerged this season as players for them. Chris Mueller is the obvious one with 9 goals, 6 assists on the year. The American that kind of plays as a wide forward. He had an outstanding season since the MLS's back tournament in July. A guy who I imagine will be a part of the national team setup. But, all around, this is a good team. Very similar to the Crew in terms of the way they want to play, the possession style, things like that. So this is a compelling matchup. I think it'll be entertaining. I think, you know, both teams obviously have a lot to play for, as Ori just detailed for us. The Crew maybe a little extra edge here just to finally get that road game win, get that off your back before you do go in the playoffs and potentially have to play on the road. So, there's a lot on the line this one. These are two teams that I think are pretty evenly matched, and I think it's going to be a fun one.
All right. And, Ori, Alex, I know we're running a little bit long. Any other observations about this Orlando game, or do we want to get some picks in here?
Just wanted to mention a couple of other players that have been playing great for them. They've got Daryl Dyke at striker, who has started to score some goals for them. And Orlando kind of played sort of like a reserve squad almost. No Mueller, no Nani against Montreal in their last game, and they came away with the road win 1-0, Dyke scoring in the 39th minute. And then also their goalkeeper, Pedro Galese. You know, this is the starting goalkeeper for Peru, you know, a World Cup goalkeeper. He's got some fantastic skills. He's been very, very good for Orlando, a team that lately has just not been conceding goals. You know, they've got a couple nil-nils. If they're winning games, they're getting a clean sheet or only conceding one goal. You know, looking at their record of late, since August 26th, they've lost one game, which was against their local rivals in Inter Miami on an 89th minute winner from Leandro Gonzalez Pires over in Miami. So this team has been fantastic all season. MLS is back finalists, runners up to Portland. And since then, they've just been nothing short of incredible. And they have a very good opportunity to potentially make a run at MLS Cup this season with how well they're playing and how many different goal scorers they have, which is something you really need going into a knockout-style one-legged playoff.
It's such a short turnaround from the game Sunday, but we talked about, you know, the need for this, especially a starting 11 that hasn't played together much at all this season, and to start picking up some form and just some chemistry over these final few games of the season. Alex, do you expect to see Caleb Porter rolling out, you know, pretty much the same lineup that we saw on Sunday?
I think he needs to. You know, like we've discussed on the panel in the last few minutes, you know, we need to get a road win. We need to go for it. We need to put everything out there that we can possibly put out there for both of these last two games, I think. This is, you know, the precursor games to the playoffs. They need to get into form, and they need to get into form now. I think what we saw from Philadelphia was a little bit of a mixed bag. So, yeah. He needs to play the starters. I don't care how tired people are. It's go time. We need to make it work.
Well, Let's find out. What are we, our Columbus Crew, going to make it work? We know where Andrew is. He is 2-0, the bad guys. No longer allowed on the Massive Report podcast. Never again. Yeah. Sorry, Andrew. That's just how it is. Unless you can redeem yourself with your next pick, we'll have to see. You guys will have to stick around for that. So Andrew's got Orlando winning 2-0. Alex, what do you got?
Yeah, you know, it's a real shame about Andrew, you know, being pessimistic like that, unacceptable on this podcast. It's going to be a 1-0 win. Absolutely. No one's cared about Orlando since Kaká retired. You know, the Crew will get things done down there. The only thing good about Orlando is Disney World, and that's half closed because of COVID. So, yeah, they're going to lose. I'm not worried. 1-0.
That's what I like to hear. How about you, Patrick?
Well, I really like Alex's logic on that one. That was some real good navigating right there.
Hey, Murph, remember when I said that Artur was going to be good because he had a bunch of Instagram followers, and that was my entire argument, and then he turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So I only hit home runs, Pat. Back to you.
That in 1,000. I think this, as I said, I think it's gonna be a good game. To me, this just feels like a draw, which I think would, you know, while you'd like to get that win out off your back, like I said, you know, I think going there and getting a point is big, especially if you start to see the team play that possession style and whatnot. So I'm going to say 1-1, you know, but it looks better, and I think people come out of that one feeling like, okay, this team is starting to look like the team that was playing in MLS's back when everyone was healthy.
Okay, draw from Pat, win from Alex. What you got, Ori?
Well, it'll be interesting because obviously Ohio and Florida will be center of attention states on Tuesday for the election. Yeah. And these two teams from these states will be the center of attention in MLS on Wednesday. And potentially for Florida and Ohio in the election, it might be too close to call, I think, in this game too, because I think Columbus is playing in familiar territory. They were able to play in Orlando for an extended period of time. But this is an Orlando City team that is playing very well. They're good at home. And I think it also ends in a 1-1 draw. But I do think we will see Caleb Porter play with his strongest 11 for this game. Because, like we've said, this is the game where you can determine whether or not you can guarantee a home match. Because I think if you want to try and take as much pressure off yourselves for decision day on Sunday, rather than go into a game against Atlanta, who will desperately need to win to try and make the playoffs, they have more to fight for than Columbus. You know, you'd rather go into that game knowing that you're going to be hosting a playoff game before, you know, the ball gets kicked off at Mapfre Stadium. So I do think that it will end in a 1-1 draw. I am not copying Pat. I wrote my score down 20 minutes ago.
Shame on both of you. Shame on Andrew as well. Alex, you're the only person who's redeemable out of this, but we'll see. I guess maybe that might not be the case because there's going to be a chance for both all three of you guys to redeem yourselves with our picks. I guess we got to talk a bit about Atlanta. Is there anything else other than they're just stinky? Anything else? You know, is there any? I saw as last week, at least Atlanta had the decency. As MLS rolled out, you know, here are all the players that and coaches that MLS teams have nominated for MVP, for Defensive Player of the Year, Newcomer of the Year, Coach of the Year. And Atlanta at least had the decency not to put anyone down for MVP and not to put anyone down for, like, Coach of the Year. You just had 23 submissions.
I didn't realize that's funny. Yeah.
So I appreciate that at least, because you had FC Cincy putting a guy who had like negative expected goals on the season, like a guy who's just a net and you know, these other teams. And I also get like a kick out of the idea of teams nominating their coach of the year. Like, what are you going to nominate? You know, another, we're going to nominate our assistant for Coach League,
right?
Actually, Caleb Porter.
Yeah. Ezra Hendrickson's done a great job.
Yeah. But, you know, this is MLS, an adult functioning league. But it has been a rough year for Atlanta. Obviously, it got off to a dubious start with Joseph Martinez exploding his knee in the first game, right? Or was that in training?
First game. It was against Nashville.
Pretty much downhill since there for Atlanta. Mentioned that they lost last week to Orlando 4-1. And this is a team that's just had a rough go. I think they've got one win in their last seven, Patrick. I think a lot of it, the lineup especially maybe, depends on what that what result you're able to get in Orlando. But what are some of the things that, you know, we don't have to hedge on too much to expect for them from this match?
Well, I don't think you have to expect them to be nearly as dangerous as they've been in the past. You mentioned the Joseph Martinez injury. They've struggled to find really much of anything to replace him this year. I don't think that that is why they've had as bad of a year as they've had. I mean, you look around the league and there's been plenty of injuries and to important players. And I think, you know, for Atlanta, the fact that you, you know, can't replace one goal scorer, and he is a very good goal scorer, don't get me wrong, is no reason that you, you know, have only won six games this year and lost 12. So, you know, 22 goals for is, you know, even for the Crew, which hasn't been a high scoring team, that's 11 back from them and one of the fewest in the league, certainly one of the fewest in the East. I mean, FC Cincinnati's got 11 goals scored, so at least you're good there. But, you know, it's as Ori said earlier, I think this is going to be a desperate Atlanta team. Desperation is always dangerous, especially if the Crew go to Orlando and get a result. Even if you play a first-choice lineup, potentially, you know, you just have that human nature of, you know, hey, this isn't a game we need type of thing. And you hope that Caleb Porter has the guys motivated and, you know, you want to have as much form as possible going into the playoffs. But, you know, going to be super interesting, I think. I really liked when I saw these last two games because, you know, there was a chance that Atlanta could be either pushing for the playoffs like they are or, you know, just trying to redeem something out of this season. At the time these games were announced, the Crew was still in first place. So obviously that would have been, you know, potentially solid win to end the year, even if you weren't making the playoffs. But yeah, I think, you know, not the Orlando team or Atlanta team, excuse me, of old, but, you know, still a team that could be dangerous if they, you know, well, because they will need a win in this last game coming to Columbus.
Yeah, and kind of looking at Atlanta's form or seeing what they've done in their schedule, you know, Atlanta's only won six games out of 22. Goal difference is minus six, which, you know, for a team that doesn't score a lot, at the very least, they're not conceding too many goals. It's not like LAFC who just say, screw it, we're just going to score five a game and then we'll concede four. But, you know, seeing what Atlanta's done and you look at some of the wins that they've had, they don't have many impressive on-paper wins. They've beaten Cincy twice. They've gotten two wins against Nashville, which is looking a lot better now because Nashville's been putting together a pretty good season. Walker Zimmerman is widely considered probably actually the favorite to win MLS Defender of the Year over Jonathan Mensah because he's had a phenomenal season for the new club over in the Music City. But Atlanta has just had long stretches of poor form and wins sprinkled in there, not many. And most recently, they had a six-game run without a win where they lost to the Red Bulls, they lost to Toronto, they lost to DC, they lost to Orlando 4-1. And who do they play to get themselves back on a winning track before they go and play Columbus? Beating Cincinnati 2-0 at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Well, what do we have to expect? Let's get some picks in here for this one. Decision day. I don't know, metaphors abound. Let's quick check. Okay, Andrew is going to be allowed back on the podcast. I'm sorry, I just remembered he wrote down, he picked Columbus in this one, 2-0. We're going to treat it as a probation, but we will let him on again because he at least got this pick right. Patrick, what do you have?
I agree with Andrew. I think 2-0 for the Crew. You know, I talked about the fact that they could come out if they get a result in Orlando and don't need to win, you know, a little flat. But I think this team really wants to show something. We talked about the fact that MLS Cup is their primary goal at this point. You know, so I think you need to go in with a win. You want to go in on a positive note heading into the playoffs. And I think just the chance to beat Atlanta anytime you can. Darlington Nagbe's old team, obviously, you know, a team that's kind of established itself in the league in a short period of time, but has had its first down season. You know, you want to take advantage, get as many wins you can against this team. So I think the Crew win 2-0.
All right. Ori, what do you got?
I will be the third person to say that they will win 2-0, even though I do believe that I think we'll see some rotation. I think even if Columbus don't come away with a victory against Orlando, I think it also really depends on what kind of a schedule we see for the MLS Cup playoffs, because Columbus is not going to have to play in either of the knockout round games. And kind of going back to the way that MLS structures their playoff schedule, it's possible that maybe we see a midweek knockout round game and then we might not see the quarterfinal games played on the weekend. So I don't know, because MLS Cup is on December 12th. So it's a full month away, you know, even, you know, after decision day is over. So it's possible that there's going to even be a long stretch of waiting time, no matter where you're going to be playing. So I think
I think there's an international break in there.
Right. So because of the international break, that's going to affect the schedule. So it's possible that every team is going to be able to really rest and relax. So maybe that's a different reason to say he still will go with his starting guys. But I think we will see some rotation for Sunday, because I think Orlando is going to be a tough game going on the road, starting probably your top guys. But I still think against Atlanta, it's going to be a 2-0 victory. This is a team that really is missing Joseph Martinez this season. They have not been able to score goals. They're going to try their hardest to win this game, because Atlanta is currently in 10th place, but they need some help from Minnesota to take care of business against Chicago on Wednesday in order to make themselves a little more comfortable in that 10th place spot. But even still, they're only a point ahead of Miami and DC United and this whole weird standing thing with the points per game and whatnot. We'll see if Brad Guzan puts in a good performance as well, if he's going to be starting, which I suspect he would be. But I think Columbus will still win the game 2-0. This team has established that they are very, very good at home. And it's going to be potentially – this is the final time we're going to be seeing games at Mapfre Stadium in the dead of fall and in the beginning of winter. So I think they also really want to take advantage of that and give the few sparse fans that will be at the game, you know, lasting memories of this is the stadium we've been at for 25 years, and create those final memories in the bitter cold of Columbus, Ohio, even though it will probably be 70 degrees for that game.
Oh, we'll see. It'll be cold for MLS Cup, though.
We can only hope it'll be 70 degrees after what
we're they said. 70. The weather people are wrong when it comes to the actual forecast of what's going to happen with the clouds and the sun. But in regards to what happens with the temperatures, they're usually pretty right. But yeah, Sunday was miserable.
Yeah,
I stood up for 3 hours because I didn't want to sit on that chair and freeze my butt.
Whew. That was rough. I tried watching that outside and went home after halftime. But let's go back here to Sunday. Alex, what you got against Atlanta?
Well, I've been getting progressively more upset as the picks have come in, because I'm also going with 2-0. And it seems like it's just a trend at this point. I don't think I don't think we've ever in the history of this podcast have four people pick the same score, but that's what's happened here today. 2-0, I think, is going to be the score. And I do want to tell Ori, you know, this will be the last game in the dead of winter until the beginning of next season, when we will all be bundled up, mm-hmm. assuming that we can actually go to the stadium then. Because I think the first game of this season, I was wearing like 3 coats. It was pretty rough. So
prediction.
You never know.
No, there okay. will be no snow in March. I'm calling it. No snow in March of 2021. We got to have something good happen to us in these last couple of months before 2021 for this month. But I'm saying no snow for 2021 in March. I'm calling it.
I think 2021 could be even worse. We could get 3 feet of snow.
In the world or crazy. Just in Columbus, Ohio?
Both.
Yes.
Both. Regardless.
Oh, God, 2021 worse than 2020. I don't want to think about that.
You never know. 2020 was worse than 2019. Could happen. I'm just saying. All I am saying, though, 2-0, it's a good score line. It's what I was feeling before we started making picks. I'm going with it. I am just curious to see whether Bart is going to double down on 2-0 with everybody else, or he's going to go 3 or maybe even 4.
He's going to say 10-0. Yeah, I mean, let's face it.
Well,
I'm on the edge of my seat. I don't know about the listeners, but I'm on the edge of my seat waiting to see what this pick is.
I will say, I think I forgot to get in an Orlando pick. So I do have a Orlando for that game. I've got a 2-0 victory for the Columbus Crew.
Okay.
And then for Sunday, I have Columbus Crew up 2-0 until the 89th minute when Josh Williams, who comes on after as a super sub, because he's back, right?
He will be back, yes. His
mystery suspension. So, you know, as we talked about, Caleb Porter, you know, wants to kind of just run this game out, try to, you know, get some guys out like a Jonathan Mensah who's been, you know, playing a lot. Let's give him some rest, not risk the injury. Just, you know, run to the corner, run to the flag type stuff. But Josh Williams having none of that and will help create a goal off a set. We'll say it's off a set piece because that's where he does most of his damage. But he'll help create one, and Columbus wins 3-0.
To all the people who rate this podcast 5 stars out of 5 stars and only give us positive comments, when you listen to the podcast where Bart predicts that Josh Williams will score and then he actually scores,
yep,
make this the new Joe Rogan podcast or the new Barstool podcast, where we're just going to be massive because we have co-hosts and hosts that can predict goal scores with ease. So 5 stars, 6 stars.
Yep. Absolutely. 5 stars, only nice things, or got it perfectly. But don't wait for my predictions to come true. Go and rate us 5 stars right now and say nice things. Don't wait until the game. You will be proved right. You will be validated when Crew win 3-0 and Josh Williams scores a late goal. But act now. Rate us 5 stars on whatever podcast platform you have. Again, if you've got problems with it, you just email Patrick Murphy those.
I thought we decided those go to Morgan. We send those to Morgan.
Oh, well, even better. Yeah. Email them to Morgan.
You can tweet at him.
Team@savethecrew.com.
Or tweet at him. Yeah. Team@savethecrew.com.
Yeah. Any complaints there, he will then address them to us. We will handle them that way. It's better for there to be a long, laborious process than to get it directly.
That's right. And live in denial that this podcast is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only nice things. If you've got bad things, tweet them to Morgan and at Morgan. So anything that we do wrong, act like it is something that he's doing wrong. That you don't like, just present it like it's him doing something you don't like. If you don't like, you know, people not picking the Crew to win 3-0, blame Morgan for that.
He never picks the Crew to win anything.
Yeah.
It's really pathetic. Unbelievable.
It's sad.
It really is.
Well, we've ran a little bit over this one, but, you know, it needed to be done, and people need to be reminded. But I've got to run pretty soon, guys. Anybody with any parting shots before we wrap this sucker up?
I just want to say that my theory for the Josh Williams suspension is that he was gambling on FC Cincinnati losing games, and they only gave him 4 games because it's just easy money. I mean, it's just really investment at that point. So, you know. Slap on the wrist. I think that's probably what happened there. It's a smart move by Josh. I heard he made quite a bit of money on that little gamble. So it's what my sources are telling me. I'm making all of this up. I just want to say that.
I'm glad you're clarifying that.
Yeah, you got to clarify that. Parting
just
words.
Just joking.
Yeah, parting words. I am ready to fill out a bracket. I just want to see a bracket and be ready to see what kind of matchups we're going to get, because I'm excited for the MLS playoffs, because we're in the midst of November, December, and the only sports that are on essentially are football and football until the Masters happens in a week. But, you know, it's a lot of NFL, college football, MLS, European soccer, and it's good to have another playoffs to break down in the midst of the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the bracket's going to look like and what's going to happen in the playoffs.
You know, I've got one more thing.
I'm looking forward to see what the bracket looks like, just because it's so damn confusing with all the the setup this year.
What's Alex got?
Oh, one more thing. if you are listening to this podcast on the 3rd of November, go and vote. Yep, if you have not voted, go and vote. I don't care who you vote for. I do care. I won't tell you who, but go and vote. We live in a great country where you have this right. Exercise that right. Go vote.
What Alex said, people, go out and vote. It's fun to do your civic duty. It's a lot of fun. If you were at the Board of Elections last weekend, you know, it was a long wait, but they had music, Kappa had bands and everything. It was awesome. So go and vote. I hope that you all have already. If you haven't, vote safely if you can. Think about if you're possible, you know, think about who you're going to vote for ahead of time. You can get lists. You can bring lists in with you so you don't have to spend a whole lot of time there. And also shout out to all the poll workers that are listening to this listening to this at some point later, because they're volunteers, they're doing, you know, yeoman's work, and so we really want to shout out them. That will wrap up this oddly patriotic wrap up for the Massive Report podcast. For Alex, for Patrick, for Ori, for Andrew, who again will be allowed on in a probationary capacity in the future, this is Bart saying bye, buddies.